The first thing about this text, and I just want to just take a moment to just reflect, you know, obviously there's a lot going on in the world right now, but this, it's important we stand in this text in this time, in the context. But the first thing is it's written beautifully. This is an absolute narrative piece. This passage from Genesis is, you know, any scriptwriters here, it's all accountants and nurses, isn't it? I'm not sorry. But this piece is absolutely, a TV screenwriter would get hold of this and go, I can work with this, yeah, okay, I'll build on this. I mean, there's so much imagery. If we go back to the original kind of text, the imagery, how powerful this is. You know, we have all this drama going on with, you know, the story so far, with where we've come to. The imagery, all this backdrop, the journey they've been on, 3 days, you know, down to climbing a hill. And also, how visually striking it is. You know, we've got the age of Abraham, at this point, father, an octogenarian himself, and Isaac, the small boy, that, you know, it's all there. This sort of drama has not been seen since the heady days of Brookside and Grand Force. Just look at the head. I mean, just, yeah. This is absolute, you know. And we walk in the path with them, aren't we? We walk in the path. All that happens here is God calls out to Abraham and says, go to this place, I'll show you. Abraham takes his time to prepare his modest things, slave, servants, bit of wood, donkey, sets off. But it's all about what he's carrying with him, isn't it? I'm a bit of a movie buff, I'm not actually, I'm trying to know, but I've seen a few films, and we've been given a lot of silence to try and get ourselves into Abraham's sound. What's on his mind? Something's building, isn't it? If we tried to pitch our TV show, maybe we'd have a bit of reflection in his face. You know, he's quite stoic. We can skip to the last one if you want, Anna, because everyone's going to be distracted by But we have this image, don't we, this journey of this now an old man setting off in this barren landscape for 3 days. And he comes to this mountain where God says, climb the mountain and prepare me this sacrifice. And, you know, we might hear a little bit of a crunch of gravel amongst the flowering shrubs, just doing my own titch march bit there. But the dust from the road around them, and he'd be reflecting, wouldn't he? He'd be there in this place of reflection, maybe. What's happened so far? What has happened in Abraham's life so far? He's in Haran, having come from Ur with his family, and God says, off you go. So he leaves, he hits the road with his wife Sarai and his nephew Lot and their entourage, and they make for Canaan. Eventually there's a famine, so they're forced out onto the road again in Egypt. Abraham passes Sarai off as his sister, and she's bought by Pharaoh. Action and consequence for his here. Abraham afflicts them with plagues, manages to get her release. They leave Egypt again, Lot and Abram part ways. I'm just going over all ground here. If you want to read more, there's a brilliant book, just a plug, where it's all in there. Lot's captured by the Elamites after the rebellion of Sodom and Gomorrah, and Abram rides into battle, freezing, then breaks bread with the king, negotiates a settlement for them. And the Lord promises Abram a nation a second time. But this is where I want to just pause, because we start to see a little bit of the humanity, and I want to build on the humanity of Abraham in this piece, because we start to see a little bit of fallibility, and that humanity comes to the fore, because now we have the encounter between Sarai and Hagar. I'm not going to dwell on it too much, because it was done really well by Matt. A fantastic job, Duncan. Your job is still safe, but you did a really, really good job, just saying. This encounter with the three of them, Abram, Sarai, and Hagar, is really, I think it's relevant, even though we're talking about Isaac, who has nothing to do with Hagar, but is still a descendant of Abraham. Obviously, we've got this whole thing going on, but we're talking about humanity now. And even with all the promises, and even with all that weight that God has put on him, he still falls short of what we would think we would have to aspire to be God's chosen people, God's chosen one, this perfection, this idea. Because our humanity dictates to us, ever since Adam and Eve unleashed the power of the tree against God's will, our actions will always bear consequences. That is, it's, you know, a fundamental fact. And the consequence from this encounter between Abraham and Hagar is obviously that she's left, essentially mistreated by Sarah, and she hits the road, she runs off. What else is she going to do? She's pregnant in dubious circumstances, she's a slave in a foreign land. Where is she going to go? She hits the road, and the angel of the Lord comes to her and says, there's a way forward for you. Go back to your masters, submit to them. God will show you a way forward. He will deal with the child, you know, he will have a future, he will promise you that. And she gives him a name, she gives him El Roy, God who sees me. And she goes back, she does go back, she submits to him. We hear about this. This continue with the recap. So Abraham continues on his journey with God, he makes the covenant of the pieces, serves the three strangers, touches on what Anne spoke about last week now. And we have this narrative between the three strangers, which leads us to the fall of Sodom and Gomorrah, where we see Lot's wife turn into the pillar of salt. And we start to see this journey with Abraham unravel. Once again, he passes Sarah off as his sister and openly brags about this fact, and she ends up being taken into the king's palace. Abraham this time manages to secure her release again with the intervention of God, and is bestowed land in Canaan, where Isaac is born. Which brings us almost back to the beginning of this piece. And in the final part of the celebration of Isaac's birth, Ishmael, who is still in the household with Hagar, with his mother, he's mocking, his family mocking, and Sarah basically, you know, gives Abraham the ultimatum. You're going to have to deal with this. So she's thrown out again. And once again, destitute, nowhere to go, middle of the desert, God comes to her and says, there's a future for you, there's a future for your son Ishmael. He's promised the same to Abraham. He's your seed, as I promised, I will make him a great nation. And he promises the same to Hagar on the road. And that's the end of the flashback. So now we're back on the path to Mount Moriah. And God has called Abraham here, at the beginning of this passage, to offer him as a burnt offering. So it's a sacrifice in the sense, which is answered last week, it would be very familiar with from their history of being in and in fact, it was also Canaanite custom to offer human sacrifices. It was, you know, part of their culture. And this encounter with God is quite befitting, almost a bit of a warning from the author of this text, that we can read it a little bit of, don't, just because you dwell in this land, and no one would necessarily question a human offering to a god, which for many, it's not right for the people of God. So it's a bit of building a bit of foreshadowing into it. I'm building this. But God doesn't offer any explanation or any insight to why he's chosen Isaac for this. He just says to him, go to this place where I will show you and offer him as a burnt sacrifice, a burnt offering to me. And so, like I said, off they go on the road, they hit the road together for 3 days. 3 days, and this is quite a significant point. 3 days. The third day, they stop at the bottom of the mountain, and Abraham says to the servants, wait here, we're going to go worship, we'll come back. And takes his son with him. Isaac is shouldering the wood, he's carrying the wood, so you can see the bundle of wood here for the altar. And we have this moment, don't we, in the text where Isaac turns to his father and says, well, you're carrying the fire and I'm carrying the wood, but where's the lamb? Where's the missing piece of this sacrifice? You know, what's going on? And it's this innocence, isn't it? It's childlike innocence. And he just turns to him and says, Dad, have you forgotten the lamb? What's you know, you're not planning it on a bit, have you forgotten the lamb? The mum will leave you a note, don't forget the lamb. But Abraham just turns to him and says, you know, God will provide. That's it. That's the end of the answer. You know, we all turn around and say, sure, because I don't know. You know, I'm doing it. God will provide. And we have all of this baggage, don't we, with him? Encounters that we can... I've built this piece up as a bit of a TV script on that, but I want to stop there. I want to break this visual. You know, forget just to go. Forget. You can switch it off and I'm done with it now.
Forget the visual backdrop of it. Forget the Rembrandts and the Rubens and the ground force. But let's stop and just strip it back a bit.
We don't need to see the imagery in the piece. That's not what it's about. It's great. It's beautifully written. It reads beautifully. But we have, quite simply, a human in Abraham who is well-rounded. He's got a bit of baggage. He's made some bad choices that have had consequences for people around him. And even so, God still comes to him and says, there's this plan for you. I've got this plan. And even though he's done this, he's shown this kind of almost a bit of wavering on the path, hasn't he, where he's been a bit easy to, Sarah suggests, sleep with Hagar, which was a custom. I'm not, putting Sarah in the crossfire, but sleep with the maid, we'll have a child, we'll have an heir, even though it's not God's promise, And everything kind of rolls from there. But we've also come along this journey with Abraham and seen how God is a God of intervention. He doesn't just leave Hagar on the path, pregnant, out of wedlock, in a foreign land. He intervenes. He says, go back. I know it's going to be hard for you. It's going to be difficult. Go back and submit. And I will give you this promise. I will deliver this to you. And he offers her a future, prosperity, I'm angry with Jeremiah, but he offers her a future and a prosperity because he promises to her that Ishmael, he will build a nation of Ishmael as well. And even though we've had this encounter with Hagar, at this point where we really find Abraham confronted by this imperative from God, go and sacrifice your son to me. He doesn't waver this time. He doesn't go to Sarah and say, what do you think I should do? Should I? He doesn't negotiate, doesn't offer anything. He would say, well, what about if I, a bit like with the Sodom and Gomorrah, with the strangers, what if I found 50 men, what if I found 10 men, what if I found 5? He doesn't do any of that. He takes his son, he leads him to the mountains. And we come to the point now where Isaac's asked him, where's the lamb? God will provide. And he gets to the top of Mount Moriah, and he builds this altar, and he binds his son to offer him as a sacrifice. Now, as a bit of a postscript, there's a lot since this passage was written that's been said about, well, what were his motivations? Did he trust that God would resurrect Isaac? Was he hoping in the promise of, that he would, say, oh, you've done, you pleased me, here's your son back. We don't know. But all we know is that he went and he bound his son and was ready to go. He had the knife, he was ready to go. And at the last moment, God intervenes again. The angel of the Lord says, stop. You've been tested. I know you fear God. Here you are, about to do this terrible thing, the thing you love the most on this earth. You've passed the test. And I just want to quickly give you a little bit more Bible, but Hebrews, the letter to the Hebrews, which I've not written out in my pit, I'm going to read it straight as it is, just to build on this point. So it's titled By Faith, and I'm just going to skip to the bit I need, which is verse 11, so it's chapter 11, verse 11, Hebrews. By faith Abraham, even though he was past age, and Sarah herself was barren, was unable to become a father, because he considered him faithful who had made the promise. And so from this one man, and he as good as dead, came descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky, and as countless as the sand on the seashore, which is obviously the end of this passage. And by faith Abraham, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. Even though God had said to him, it's through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. And then it adds, as I alluded to, Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead, which obviously goes with it. We can have that conversation another day. But for the purposes of this passage, he's prepared that even though he knows that there'll be the fulfillment of this creation of the nation, right, from his son, he's prepared to offer him to God as a mortal sacrifice. He's prepared to put him to death on the altar. And it's faith in the holy sense that leads both of them to this place. Because Abraham has this unwavering faith in God that he's now passed through the gates on this journey and has redeemed himself. Because when it came to making a decision about We're getting older. God hasn't given us a child yet. Should we do something about it ourselves? He wavers. He does. He tries. And it ends up having catastrophic consequences. But yet, at this point, he has this blind faith in God and says, God has said, go to this place and sacrifice Isaac, so that's what I'm going to do. And Isaac, as we've seen, has this unwavering faith in his father. He doesn't question where's the lamb more than once. He just says, where's the lamb? God will provide. That's good enough for me. You're my dad. I trust you. For God. And God intervenes at the binding, which is in itself I couldn't find the word I was looking for, so I apologise. But it's a big part, it's a bit simplistic. It's a big part of preparing a sacrifice is the binding. It's a ritual almost in itself. In the imagery and the Rubens painting, which was the first one, you don't see how it's bound. And yet, when this is taken from the Torah, it's very, they build very much on this image of the binding. So it would have been laid on the altar and bound, trust almost, if you will, as a calf or a lamb would have been. And that in itself shows a willingness to go through. You don't just bind someone for sacrifice to then say, absolutely change my mind, I'll cut them loose. It's that in itself has crossed the line. So when God intervenes and reiterates the promise he has for Abraham, Abraham hears the ram caught in the thicket and he's caught by his horns and God truly has provided. It's not, I haven't got a picture of that, but God has provided for him and he names this place Jehovah Jireh, God has provided, the mountain that God will provide. And in doing so, God releases Isaac from this covenant of the sacrificial lamb. And there's a lot, this is a very laden text with a lot of foreshadowing. You know, you can go back to the talking about the Exodus from Canaan after the famine, they end up in Egypt. One of Abraham's early descendants, Jacob, ends in a similar situation with his son Joseph, ends up there seeking, to make a way for the people of Israel, because he goes to Egypt and prepares them for the famine because he has the visions from God, and eventually ends up with those brothers going, watch the musical, it's fantastic. But that in itself is foreshadowing. But the biggest foreshadowing here is obviously the sacrifice of a son, one son. I think there's a minor character in the Bible who is an only son who's offered for sacrifice. No, obviously not minor. It's Jesus. Well, I was trying to build that point. But God doesn't waver at that point. Jesus is perfect. He's not a wholly rounded human like Abraham. He's not got baggage. He's not come down and made some rough choices and been led astray by temptation. He is perfect. He's wholly perfect. He's absolutely perfect. There's no sin there. He's got no reason to be put to a sinner's death. And at the last moment, in Abraham and Isaac's story, God intervenes and says, I don't want you to go through with this. I don't want you to give you your own son. God promised to you. And yet he does with Jesus. And I always sit and play over this point. I've studied this text since I was a teenager at school because, a lot of the time people say, oh, well, this reflects on the morality of the Bible, the human sacrifices. How could you offer your son as... And I sit now and I think... God loved his people so much that he gave us his only son to save us. And yet when he was testing Abraham, and Abraham was so willing to give us the same sacrifice, his son, who God had promised would lead us and build a nation, God doesn't want him to suffer that. And I think of the humanity for both of them, the kind of aftershock of this, for Isaac, who's been a child and bound and nearly put to death by his dad who he loves, and at the last moment, God saves him. He then has to walk through the rest of his life with his father, kind of having a little bit of that on his shoulder. But God didn't want him to go through with that. God didn't want Abraham to have to live with it. And yet he was willing to live with, offering us Jesus' sacrifice. And even though he's certain in the resurrection power, we see that with Jesus being resurrected, he is still a whole human. He is still given to us in life, dies a sinner's death, and yet God's promise of resurrection is fulfilled in him. And I just want to close by saying that Another strong passage, part of this passage, is the obedience that Abraham shows to God. And it's something that we might think of, well, I'm not a parent. I want to put a little bit of that in there. Imagine as a parent offering your child as a sacrifice. And yet actually, how would I say that to someone who wasn't a parent? How would I say that to someone who was familiar with this passage maybe but not a Christian? How would I talk about it? And I think God asks Abraham, he calls on him and says, Abraham, and Abraham says, here I am. Go and do this thing for me. Go and take the thing you love the most on this earth and give it to me. I command you to do so. And then when the angel of the Lord stays his hand, it's the same again, Abraham, Abraham, here I am. I'm willing to be counted. I'm willing to do your work. Even though I've got all this baggage, even though I've done all these things, even though I've hurt all these people, I'm obedient to you, God. I know now that taking the easy route doesn't lead me to where I need to be. Sometimes you have to make those hard choices. But we can be reassured in the example of the one son being sacrificed, in Jesus being sacrificed for us, that even though it seems impossible what God's asking of us, there's always a way that God will provide, whether it's the ram in the thicket to give us back our son, or in giving us his son to die a sinner's death for us. So, I just want to take a moment to let it all sink in. There's a lot in this passage, and it's a lot to unpick, but if we have the empowerment of the journey that Abraham's been on, that we've walked with him, that we've heard different people give us this story, this is the pinnacle point, this is the moment where he's on the mountaintop, he's figurative, he's closest to God, and he's not found wanting this time, he's not found unwilling, he's not found wavering in his faith. And sometimes God might ask us for something that might seem impossible. He might, literally, hopefully, ask us to sacrifice our children to him. But when he puts us on that place, on that mountaintop, where we're closest to him, even if we're all alone, he will provide. Mm. And we can have that certainty and the promise that God will provide. And I just want to close by saying thank you for walking through this passage with me.
Isn't it wonderful?